a little bit more about this whole question of our Gemara and Dafayim Ches, which tells us this din of Kol Ma'avir Aldas Balabayas Nikra Gazlin, or at least Reb Meir's view that that's the case, and whether or not that's a viable and workable plan in order to protect intellectual property. So we raise the question of whether or not, just even intellectually, philosophically, and then specifically halachically, how we can relate to intellectual property appropriation, whether that's considered to be theft or not. And we said we basically could think of three ways to look at it, just abstractly. One is to say that, yes, we're willing to extend the terminology of theft and stolen property even to intellectual property, which opens up all kinds of questions for reasons that the definitions don't fit perfectly. Or should we say, no, listen, when you steal an object, so you take away the object, you have it, the other person doesn't. When you take somebody's intellectual property, whatever that means, there's all kinds of reasons why it doesn't fit that model. So we can't really call it straight out gezel. So what can we call it? Well, maybe we could call it mutter, but that doesn't seem to feel right, doesn't seem to sit right. So if it's not mutter, what is it? So then it's something else. It's prohibited for some other reason, but not straight gezelah. So he went through some possibilities, and some of the guys suggested possibilities which happened to accord well with that which is in Svarim. Some suggested Dina de Malchus Adina. He mentioned, yes, as that is pointed out, the view of the Beis Yitzchak and others, you know, it certainly is a strong possibility, and that's certainly true. But saying Dina de Malchus Adina means that you don't really have a better answer. It means that the law is what binds you to it, but there's no independent reason why it should be prohibited. And we also discussed in that context that even from a legal perspective, that may reflect that case. It may reflect the fact that there is no actual identifiable offense other than the fact that society has an interest in protecting intellectual property so that people will continue to produce. And therefore, we have to act as a legal system to protect it, and that's what the laws are meant to do. And then in between that was the possibility that it's a moral imperative that doesn't attach to any other clear value. So whether you want to call that the Asisa Yashav HaTov, as was suggested, we mentioned the Tshuva Shol Umeshuv has it as a kind of an obvious idea, but without really explaining how. So maybe it's that idea that it's just simply morally wrong to be taking somebody else's work and profiting off it for yourself. And possibly it's a Yashav HaTov imperative. And then basically we had gotten up to this point, our sugya, which suggests that if somebody takes an item from somebody else, whether he's renting, as in the case in our Gemara, or the Gemara also has a case where you receive a gift of tzedaka and you deviate from the conditions under which it was given. Conditions with a small c may not necessarily be the halachic terminology, but if you deviate from the conditions, the Reb Meir's opinion is nikra gazlin, he's called a gazlin. So the question was, what exactly does that phrase mean, and how can it be applied? And we mentioned Reb Zalman Nechemia's article in Tchumen, where he suggests that it's not tnai, it's not a condition, because of various deficiencies in that theory, and rather it's a situation of shiur, that the seller is leaving out certain aspects of the sale and holding on to them for himself, and that's the ability he has. And so too, a seller could do that if he wants to sell you a sefer, or he wants to sell you a tape or a computer program. He can sell you the object, but hold back for himself the right to copy it and say, I'm not giving you that right. I'm giving you the right only to use this for yourself, but not the right to copy it and to do anything else with it. And that would effectively allow him to forbid those activities under the concern of Nikra Gazlin. So that's essentially Reb Zalman Nechemia's position. I think that's basically what we're up to. Everybody is essentially clear, essentially up to speed. So just, I didn't necessarily, and it's also a funny question whether I could, under the circumstances, lislushitaso, Xerox this article in Tchumen and give it out. So that's a fair question. But I think at least this much is fair. So I have here one copy of one of the pages of the article, just to highlight what his halachic conclusions are. He has a number of halachic conclusions, which I'll share with you in a second. One of the points he discusses in the article is there is another possibility, there's another angle which other Svarim have talked about as well. He's not the only one to bring this up. But there is a sugya which appears in Maseches Bava Basra and Maseches Bava Kama called Kofin al Midah Stone and Zen Nene Vezelo Chaser. Is that a familiar sugya at all? So essentially, the Gemara talks about a circumstance where, and there's a couple of different models in the Gemara, but basically those two phrases go together, but not 100%, and I'll try to explain why, just as much as necessary to understand this specific point. The Gemara talks about, for example, in Bava Kama, the Gemara talks about Hadar b'chatzer chavero shalom midaito. That let's say I have a house, and I have a guest room, and I'm not a hotel. I don't charge for the guest room. I don't rent it out. It's not a source of revenue. And somebody happens to live there for some period of time without telling me about it. And therefore, I find out about this afterwards, let's say, so I decide, okay, you know what, let me charge rent. Let's assume that the way the premise is clearly in the Gemara, there's no chisaron to me. I'm not missing anything because of the fact that he was staying there. Nothing was depreciated in any significant way. Nothing was broken. Just happens to be. I figure, okay, he benefited from sleeping in my guest house for a few nights. So the hotels in the neighborhood cost $150 a night. So he was there for 3 nights. I send him a bill for $450. Am I allowed to do that? So there the Gemara posits that that's a scenario of Zenene v'zeloi chaser. That essentially the other person benefited, so that's why I think I could maybe charge him. But the second part is crucial. Ze, me, the owner of the house, lo chaser. It didn't cost me anything to let him benefit. So if I want to benefit, if I want to charge him, I don't really have the right to, because we don't have any explicit deal. We didn't arrange that I'm going to charge him rent. And I'm not a hotel. I don't normally profit off this. If I was the Waldorf Astoria, and I find out afterwards that somebody snuck into the hotel and slept for a couple of nights in the presidential suite, so then I have the right to send a bill. That's something that's kaimala agra. That's something which is there for profit-making purposes, and therefore he should be obligated to pay for that. But let's say that's not the case. That's not what I do. I don't rent out this room, and I just want to charge him for the hana that he got. So that apparently doesn't rise to the threshold of hana. Now, many people associate that with the phrase that appears in the Gemara Maseches Bava Basra. Many people include Tosfos. Tosfos in Bava Kama also brings in this phrase. But it's instructive, I think, that this phrase does not appear in the Gemara in Bava Kama that talks about that case. The phrase I'm talking about is Kofin al Midas Stone. So the Gemara appears in Bava Basra, for example. The Gemara says that we compel you not to be a sodomite, not to act like somebody from stone. The idea of being like a stomite, it's a good question what exactly the halacha means. It's a very interesting point because, you know, we relate to stone in the Chumash just tangentially. The Torah tells us a story about the people of stone, and they were chatoyim ma'od, they were chatoyim or rishoyim ma'od, says the Torah, something along those lines. And akidekach, that they were wiped out, they were destroyed. So the Torah is not really clear what they did, but it has halachic nafkaminas because the Gemara has this category of kofin al midas stone. And what seems to be the case is that they were apparently completely anti-chesed personalities, that they didn't want anyone benefiting from them, even in a situation where there would not have been any loss to them. Person doesn't want to give tzedakah because he's stingy, okay, so that's not such a great thing, but it is what it is. Does he hate Sahara to hold on to your money? Fine. But if somebody doesn't want anyone else benefiting from him, even in a way that doesn't end up costing the owner, so then that seems to be akin to what stone people did. And that's what the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos. So the Mishnah says that different midos, different personalities people could have. So one of them is a person who says, Shali, shali, v'shalcha, shalcha. What's mine is mine, and what's yours is yours. So what kind of a person is that? No, sounds reasonable. Maybe he's not incredibly generous. You wouldn't say that person's a tzaddik, because he's not looking to give anything else. But he's not a rasha either. He's not stealing the other guy's stuff. He's just saying, what's yours is yours, what's mine is mine. So you think that's a so-so person, a beinoni. So that's one opinion in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, is a beinoni. The other opinion is, harezeh midas tom, a person who believes that mine is mine, yours is yours, and you can't benefit from mine, even if it doesn't cost me anything. That's considered to be a midas tom. So the Gemara of Abbasra has a different kind of case, which you could understand why the phrase is utilized there, because it's a little bit of a different application. The Gemara there talks about somebody who, let's say you have two brothers who are going to share an inheritance. The father left some land, and they're going to split the land. And one of the brothers has the land that is, he already has land that's close to half of the land, it's on the other side of the land, let's say. So you have the land here that's going to be split in half, and one of the brothers has land over here. So the brother who has the land over here is going to want this half so he can have one big contiguous property, while the other brother doesn't care. He doesn't have any existing land, and each half of the field is worth the same. So it shouldn't matter whether he gets this half or this half. This half is only particularly valuable to the brother who has land next to it. Right? Make sense so far? So there, the Gemara says, to object to this brother who owns this land getting this part of the land, which would help him in a way that wouldn't really make a difference to the other guy, that is another example of zenene v'zelo chaser. This brother would profit, and the other brother wouldn't lose anything to let him profit. So to object to that, we say that's what a stone-like person would do, to try to get in the way of somebody else benefiting in a way that doesn't cost the other party. That's stone-like behavior. So there you have zenene v'zelo chaser. It's used in a sharper context. Right? Because to interfere there, that's mamish cruelty. Why do you care the other guy should get a better piece of land? Well, in the case of Bava Kamma, it's not really cruelty. Right? It's that you want to profit. You want to get paid. You figure the guy slept in your house. Why should you not take the opportunity to get a few bucks? But the answer is you're not entitled. Because you didn't have such a deal, and there's no chisaron to you, so you're not entitled to it. So then in Rav Zelo Chas, you're not entitled to get paid. And the Gemara in Bava Basra is a little bit more of an intense kind of situation there that's really cruel. So that's where you have the phrase, kofen al midastom. Okay, so far everybody following? Make sense? So, yes sir?
But it's the guy who slept there without permission, obviously he didn't do something.
So that's an interesting question. That's a whole other discussion that we've shown and discussed. It's interesting. You certainly have that impression. It's certainly the more intuitive possibility that just because the guy doesn't have the right to charge you for it shouldn't make it mutter.
Right.
But there are, we've shown him actually, you know, if we were doing that sugya head on, we'd actually go into it a little bit more. There are, we've shown him who say that taka, you're not even allowed to prevent him from doing it l'chachila. Which is, most we've shown him assume not that way, that you could prevent him from doing it l'chachila, but you can't charge him afterwards. So that's an interesting question of itself. So it seems reasonable, but it's not as obvious as it sounds. Hi. So it sounds like it means that Beis Din forces you not to be this way. And it's an interesting question. So the question of whether Kofra Midas Tom and Zen and Nevzelo Chaser always go together. Are they basically two halves of the same coin? So I'm not so sure they always do. I think the case in Bava Basra is when you're being cruel, so Beis Din forces you not to be that way. And in the case of Bava Kamma, it's not about cruelty. It's just about you're profiting without basis, and therefore you don't have a right to do that, so we're not going to let you profit, but it's not going to say that that's Midas Tom so much. But it actually relates to Jay's question, because it's the other half of the question. It's in the question of Bava Basra, so there we're going to force you not to stop the other guy from benefiting. So you could, if you really want to say that they're completely parallel concepts, so you could say, I want to force you not to stop this guy from benefiting by sleeping in your guest room. If he can sleep in your guest room in a way that's not going to cause you any problems, and let's, in most cases today, it's hard to imagine, right? Because you have your privacy, you have all kinds of reasons why you wouldn't want it. But it's a little bit difficult to really get inside the mindset of the Gemara, but let's assume that there is such a case where it's really not going to affect you in any way, and the only reason you'd be stopping him is just to prevent him from benefiting. So you could make a case, if you really saw the two points as parallel, that kofen al midas tom, we would force you to let the guy stay there. Which again, is in a modern mindset, it's a little hard to really get into that mentality, but that's how some understood it. This has a nafkamina. This is a point that I actually remember hearing from a teacher who I mentioned previously, Rabbi Levine, Zichron Levracha, and I didn't think it was necessarily so obvious based on this issue, that he discusses a scenario where, let's say, you're driving somewhere. And as you're driving, you see a friend of yours waiting for a bus or something like that to go to the same place. So you offer him a ride. And in the context of offering him the ride, you tell him also that you have to, he has to pay half the tolls, he has to pay half the gas, whatever. So Rabbi Levine thought that was morally wrong to do. He said, if the two of you made a deal, let's say you were talking beforehand, and you said, listen, we're both planning on driving separately to this event, so instead of two sets of tolls and two sets of gas, let's just go in one car together. We'll go in your car, but we'll split the tolls and the gas or whatever it is. Okay, fine. So if that was the deal you made, that you'll both split the cost, that's one thing. But you were going to go anyway. You had got up that morning and you had every intention of paying for the full trip. And then you have an opportunity to benefit somebody else, so you caught on the way. So Rabbi Levine thought that it's Zenen of Zelo Chaser. Fine, okay, you can't charge the guy. But then he went further and he said, because Kaifen al Midas Stone, that shows you that it's a completely non-Jewish attitude to try to charge for this. So that if the guy would offer to pay, you'd have to turn it down. You'd say, no, I don't even accept your offer. Not only that you can't charge and you can't bring him to Beis Din and collect, but even if the guy voluntarily pays, we'll say, Kaifen al Midas Stone, it's not right to accept. So I wonder if that's the only way to see it, because based on what we were just saying, there's two models of Zenin of Zelo Chaser. There's one model where it's cruelty, so that's when we force you not to be cruel, where it's stam, you want to mess over the other guy. And then there's another model where it's not so much cruelty, but you have an opportunity to profit, and okay, so you're not entitled to the profit, that's the conclusion. But to say that you shouldn't accept it if the person offers, if the person says, listen, I'm happy to pay because you benefited me, so to say that you're not allowed to accept it seems to be a bigger chiddush. Now, it's not an impossible chiddush to say, because you could theoretically read the two cases in a way that does equate them, and say, you could say, listen, you have no right to deprive somebody of benefit that doesn't cost you anything. And therefore, there's nothing to charge for. Maybe. So this has some relevance to this scenario as well. Right? So if I have a product that's out there, and somebody wants to make copies of it, somebody wants to do whatever he wants to with that object, so do I have the right to stop him? You see where this is a little bit overlapping with this type of a concept. So there was a tshuva of the Node of Yehuda, where he discusses the following scenario. There was a case where somebody hired a printer. Now, of course, in his days, that was a much bigger ASEC than it is nowadays, when you could just have the computer set up everything. So it used to mean that in the days of the Node of Yehuda, 300 years ago, a little bit less, 250 years ago, so you would have the printer set the type with blocks of letters. And it's very, very labor intensive. And then he'd have the plates, and then he'd use these plates with a set type to create impressions of the pages. So there was a man who wrote a commentary on part of the Mishnayos, and he hired a printer to make up a page for him, to print the book, to print his sefer. And he printed his commentary on the bottom of the Mishnayos. So the page would have the Mishnayos at the top and his commentary on the bottom. And he had hoped that he'll sell more Sfarim, because even people who aren't necessarily looking for his commentary will be happy to get this edition of the Mishnayos, this nicely laid out edition of the Mishnayos, so it's worth it for that. He'll sell those copies, he'll make the whole product into something that's attractive. Okay? So far, so good? Hi.
That case where you give someone a lift who's going somewhere anyways, would that apply even if the guy was, let's say, going to take a bus and he would end up paying more than you would be charging?
So, you know, again, I think the case is a little bit arguable, but the way Rabbi Levine presented it, if I remember correctly, is that he thought that, yeah, if you had not worked out with this person, that you're going to split your costs. So the in your plan, it was going to be you were going to pay for this completely by yourself. So the fact that you're doing a favor for him since it doesn't cost you 1 cent more, if that's really the case, you don't have to go out of your way, you don't have to pay anything extra, you don't have any more wear and tear in the car, there's nothing that's costing you anymore, so then you have no basis to collect. And the fact that he's benefiting, we know that he's benefiting, whatever it was, it doesn't even matter whether it's more or less, the fact is he's saving the whole cost of a ticket, whether it's any amount. So you would think, okay, listen, since he's saving that, so let him pass the savings on to me. So, you know, and again, it may be a reasonable position to take, but Rabbi Levine thought it was comparable to this kofen al midas tom situation, that it's wrong to charge.
It could cost you less. I mean, if you pick up another person, you have a carpool, and it costs you less. Anymore.
Right, so then if you also get the carpool lane, so then you're not there also. Right, you should pay him. So that's so he'll say to you that, in the chaser. Hi, Moshe.
What about if before he gets on, you ask him if he wants and then come with you?
So, yeah, I don't know exactly, you know, you'd have to figure out exactly the level, because I could hear Sfar say the whole thing is mutter, so I don't know exactly how Rabbi Levine would break it down, but his basic, you know, the two extremes were that if you'd worked it out in advance, okay, fine, then you're splitting the expenses, and if this is your normal plan and you end up benefiting somebody else, that's not a basis for you to charge that person if it's nothing, no extra expenses for you. At what point do you give up your ability to make the plan? You know, can you make the plan up until he gets into your car? I don't know. But I have to figure out exactly where he drew the line. But, and again, I think there's a basis to disagree with this whole thing and say, but again, you know, to charge him would be hard. To charge him against his will would be hard to do. Although, again, you don't have the right not to let somebody into your car. There is an interesting literature about this. There's a lot of discussion, the Netziv has chuvas about this, but also in the later literature. So, for example, Joseph Lieberman, not the senator, but the Mechaber of chuvas, Mishnas Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Lieberman, has chuvas about this in the later volumes. He's famous for his farm on Shemitah. He's a big Tamar Chacham in Eretz Yisrael. Wrote many volumes on Shemitah. He also has a few volumes of chuvas. And one of his later volumes in Chelik Ches or something like that. So he has a discussion about whether we say that giving people rides in general is that zenen of zelo chaser, in the sense that you should essentially be obligated to give people rides. So there is an interesting literature about this. So should you say, no, Maisa, maybe you want to make phone calls, maybe you want to be alone with your wife in the car, maybe you want to think, maybe you there's wear and tear, maybe you don't like the guy's presence. So all kind of questions about whether or not we consider giving rides in general to be Zed Nev Zelucha. So there is an interesting literature about this in general. But so it's a fascinating sugya by itself. And what exactly is the implication of the whole stone parsha of the Torah? And again, this is a major parsha of the Torah, right? If you think about this, it's really a very powerful thought. Yeah, this city was destroyed because of their rishus. And what's their rishus? The rishus, apparently, as far as we can tell, is that they refused to do favors for people. They refused to, they were so anti-chesed that they wouldn't let anyone else benefit even when it didn't mean anything off their backs. So that's Stam Alpi Darach HaMusar, a fascinating thing to reflect upon. You know, it's not that they're just not our role models, but they really are treated pretty severely in Chumash. But in any event, so the relevance to this sugya, so there was a discussion about this issue in the tshuva, the Nodi Bihud has a tshuva where this guy who made the Mishnayos, when he hired a printer to make the typeset for his Mishnayos, so after that, the typesetter thought, okay, you know what? I'll make some profit now. I'll get a little bit of money for myself because I worked as a kabbalin, basically, for this guy who wrote the commentary in the Mishnayos, and I made the place for him, and he then is going to sell his svarim based on the plates that he used to publish them. But I own the plates. Now that itself gets into a whole interesting discussion, right, about when the kabbalin owns the results of his work and when he doesn't, etc., etc. But working off that assumption, the kabbalin owns his plates here. So now, because what would the author have done with the plates? Right, the author doesn't have his own printing press. He hired this guy to publish a sefer. So in order to publish a sefer, he had to make plates in order to do it. The author never touched these plates. The author would never have seen these plates. But now the printer wants to take the plates and he figures, I'll publish my own Mishnayos. I'll cover up the part which has his commentary on the bottom, whatever he put there, I don't remember. But I'll use the plates for the Mishnayos to make my own nice fancy Mishnayos. and I'll sell my own set on the market. So somebody who wants this nice fancy Mishnayos can either buy mine or he'll buy the one with this guy's commentary. And the author said, no, I paid for this service to have you do this, and I object. I don't want you using the plates that I paid for to make another set of Mishnayos that's going to compete with mine. So what do you think? Does the author have the right to say that? What's your initial thought? Hi?
I think he does, because it's okay. He is being chaser if he gives them the plates to use.
Oh, so that's essentially the Noda Behuda's conclusion. But you see, you have to kind of build all the inverse of that sugya of Zen and Nevezel Achasa. Right? It's the other side of that sugya. That here, strictly speaking, you'd say, what right does this guy have to stop anybody from doing anything? The printer made the plates himself on his own property. Right? It was not the part of the deal that the author gets to keep the plates. And if the author has the plates, he would throw them out. He wouldn't have anything to do with them. He doesn't have his own printing press. So the plates, they're the property of the printer. So what right does this author have to tell the printer he can't use them for this? It seems a little bit midas domoi, telling you can't use what you have to print your svar. So your approach is correct, the way the Noda Behuda understood it, that essentially this is zenene. The printer would benefit from using the plates. But Zeh Chaser, the other guy, would lose. Because now he's going to have a harder time selling his commentary. Because he's going to have to compete for the fancy Mishnayos market with the printer's Mishnayos. So that's Zeh Neneh v'Zeh Chaser. Which is a whole fascinating model. Really?
The guy already had plates of the Mishnayos. Assuming that he had them before and he made them just stop and he had them.
Right.
And the mechaber, whoever came in, said, "I wanted that Mishnayos with my commentary."
Mm-hmm.
So,
that presumably would be a whole himself, right. That would be a whole different story, right? So that would presumably be a whole different story. It would be, you know, comparable to nowadays where everything already exists on the computers. And
there's something that he doesn't really have the plates of the Mishnayos himself. He's not going to be. There's no reason to have them other than the mechaber wants his sparm published and he wants the payer shachar. So he's how to do it. But assuming he already has the Mishnayos, I guess, plates, then would that be a whole different thing?
Yeah, because then that wasn't from his labor. You know, if that just existed, so then it doesn't seem like he should have any grounds to stop other person from publishing his own Mishnayos. Why does the Mechaber have any more right to publish Mishnayos than the printer does? But the whole key element here is that the Mechaber paid the printer to do this, and now the printer is going to take this work that was done at the behest, that was done on the back of the author, because the author paid for it, and use it to compete with him. So there's a couple of fascinating chidushim in this point. Right? You see that basically there is this chiyuv nene. In general, that phrase appears in halacha in other contexts, where if I benefit from somebody, sometimes there is a payment that's due that person. And that's where the Gemara says, but not if there's no chisaron for that person, if there's only hana without chisaron. So in this case, says the Noda Behuda, it's hana that he's getting from what you did. You paid to have these plates made. He did it, but he did it on your salary, so he benefits from your money. And he's doing it in a way that is machaser you. Now, how is it machaser you? It's a chisaron which we didn't otherwise recognize. That's why I think it's so fascinating. Because we discussed this a little bit last week about the problems of calling it gzela. Right? So you say that the intellectual property, calling it gezel, is difficult because you're not taking away money from the other guy. You're not taking away property from the other guy. You're appropriating it for yourself, but the other person still has his property. It's not like a normal model of gezel where you take something and he doesn't have it. Now, people here pointed out, I think David mentioned, that, well, you are costing him something because you're costing him the ability to profit off of that item. He would have cashed in, he would have distributed himself, and maybe to you or to anybody else, and now he can't, so that's a loss of money. But we said initially that that's not really called gezel, because stopping somebody from profit is not really geza. It's sometimes mazik and sometimes not even that. Right? Because there are all kinds of scenarios where you'll stop somebody from profiting. Right? So, for example, competition. You might stop somebody from profiting. Now, competition is sometimes appropriate and sometimes inappropriate. Sometimes it's a hasagas gavul yorei lominus chavero, and sometimes it's not. But in both situations, you may be depriving the other guy of some profit. Or let's say I invent something which makes your invention obsolete, so now nobody buys your invention anymore. Does that make me a goslin? Or let's say I write a bad review of your product. Now, that evokes the concept of Lashon Hara, which is also called Grumma B'Nezikin, is called causative Nezikin, but it's not Gazel, and sometimes it's Mutter, if it's Latoelas, you know, if it's an appropriate bad review that protects people from buying something that's a waste of their money, so then it's not even Asur. So there are many kinds of scenarios where you're depriving somebody of profit, and we don't necessarily call it gezel. That's not enough to answer the question. But what the Note of Yehuda is mechadesh here is that zeh neneh v'zeh ofaser means, first of all, there is a chiyuv neneh, there is a chiyuv that you pay because you're benefiting from the guy, and that will expand the parameters of chisarim. That zeh neneh v'zeh lo chaser is pater, means zeh neneh v'zeh chaser is chayiv, and that chisarim doesn't necessarily mean that you take something away from him, but preventing him from benefiting could be a chisarim. Preventing him from profiting could be a chisarim. And when we talk about Grumma B'Nezikin, for example, Grumma B'Nezikin, even when it's Asur, is generally Pater. We generally don't charge the other guy for the Nezek, because it's, among other reasons, hard to assess. That may or may not be the reason why Grumma B'Nezikin is Pater, but that's one element of it. So, but it normally means you can stop the other person from being Mazik you. So essentially, that's what the Note of Yehuda says here, that this author has the right to say, you can't compete with me using my work. If you compete with me using your own work, then we can figure out when competition is appropriate and when it isn't. But for you to compete with me using the work that I paid for, the plates that I paid for, that's a situation of zeh neneh v'zeh chaser, and I have a right to interfere with that. So there's a lot of elements, there's a lot of chidushim on this concept in terms of the normal usage of the concept of zeh neneh v'zeh lo chaser. But that has potential ramifications for the whole intellectual property discussion. So Rav Zalman Nechemi invokes that in the context of his piece after he talks about this whole shiur idea. And it's an idea that others have put forward as well. That does seem to be a model that has some potential in terms of intellectual property protection. Right? That basically to say that if you are going to benefit from somebody else's efforts in a way that hurts that person, so then maybe that's essentially zeh neneh v'zeh lo chaser. I normally don't have the right to stop somebody from benefiting from something that I've done or that I own if it doesn't cause me any loss. But the implication is that if it does cause me a loss, I have the right to be ma'akev. I have the right to say, you can't copy my tape, you can't distribute your bootleg copy of my book because it interferes with my purpose. Now, but that, in that case, that is possibly a very viable model. It will also be dependent on the assumption that there is a chisarim. If there's no chisarim, if I just say, I don't want you copying my book, or I don't want you downloading this, or whatever it is, but the metzias is, there is no chisarim to me, you'll have to figure out exactly what kind of a scenario that is. Let's say you're not selling it at all, you're not selling it anyway, or wouldn't sell it under these circumstances, so then it becomes a weaker case to make. But that's not such a problem if it handles the more serious issues where you're actually causing some type of a problem. And we might be able to define chisarim in a broad sense. It wouldn't necessarily have to only mean profit. It could mean a reputational chisarim if you're going to take my work and put it somewhere where I don't want it. It could mean other types of more broadly defined chisronos. But that might theoretically be a model for protecting intellectual property along those lines. Okay, everyone following so far? Okay, so actually we're going to have to end in a minute, but just as mentioned here, if you take a look, So the maskanas that he discusses here, just to mention some of them. So his position in Rabbi Zalman Nechemia l'halacha is that if somebody who's selling a cassette says that he doesn't allow anyone to copy it, so it's forbidden from the purchaser to copy it, because of this din of Asur Lahavir Al Das Balabais. And it's prohibited, but he says, Eilo Din Gazlan. Why not Din Gazlan? Because Reb Meir is the one who says he's like a Gazlan, but Chachamim disagree. So his whole position is that Chachamim agree it's wrong, they just don't call it Gzeil. So therefore he thinks it's still prohibited to do that. He said that if a person does copy somebody else's tape that is on the market, that is meant to be sold, so if there's going to be a hefsid to the seller from the fact that he has less sales to make, so then the shaila comes up whether or not he's obligated to pay midin nene. And then he quotes the Rabbi Yehuda, says that he is obligated to pay from that perspective. And he goes on to say that this is all if the mocher just indicated his opinion that he doesn't want it to be copied. But if he said it beferish, or he writes it, that for the purposes of copying he's not selling it, so then that is a shiur, that is something that he is saving for himself. And somebody who copies it from him, in that case he thinks is called a gazlan. And he has to pay back midin gazlan. And that means the value of the cassette. And maybe you could also charge him midin nene. And that is discussion he goes into. He says that if somebody copies the cassette that was already copied without the permission of the owner, somebody copies from somebody else, says is not considered to be a gazlan, but may be chayiv midin nene. But he says in any event, it's prohibited to purchase a cassette from somebody who essentially stole it, in his understanding. Because, he says, doing so is causing him to add on more averus. He's going to keep doing this because he has people to buy it from him. So that's going to essentially cause more averus in the world. We did earlier in the year the sugya of Lifnei Iver. This is related. But he says it's permissible to accept it as a gift, because that's not necessarily going to cause him to keep going once he's already giving it out for free. So in any event, as we mentioned, there are those who disagree, and Rav Tali Bar Ilan has a whole response to this in his in the following issue of Tchumen, where he says this whole concept of Shiur, that Rav Zalman Nechemi is saying, this idea that you can leave some benefit for yourself when it's not a tangible benefit, and it's not a physical benefit, so he disagrees with that whole premise, and he says if that was true, you would have found people doing it forever. And also, it's just way too wide of a latitude given to the seller here. So somebody could, like we mentioned the other day, if somebody wants to sell cars and he wants to sell twice as many cars, he could say, all right, I'll sell you a car. You can only use it Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday. And if you want to drive on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you got to buy a second car. So I'll sell twice as many cars, but it's not in my right to do that. It's not in my right to say I can arbitrarily tell you how you can benefit from the item that you're paying for just because I would like to make more profit. So that some say is kind of a reductio ad absurdum, that's how you could take it to a point where it's clearly not going to work, and they argue on Rav Zalman Nechemia's premise based on that. So there are some who dispute, and many who dispute, but Willig, we mentioned, also doesn't accept this chiddush. So then what are we left with? So Rabbi Yehuda's point seems to be a strong point. But also not to be ignored is there is also an issue of v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha. Right? That if the person is going to labor and then not be able to benefit from his work and not be able to control it in the most rudimentary way because somebody else is going to come and just take it for themselves. So it's fair to say, would you want somebody else to do that to you? Right? If you worked hard and you hoped that you should be able to profit from your work, and then somebody else just decided to make his own copies and not pay you or sell it to others, so you would not want that. So the whole understanding that some of the Rishonim have, that v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, is essentially a lav. It's essentially an iser. Because the whole question that Rambam maintains, that the pasuk v'ahavta l'reicha kamocha is a mitzvah of chesed, That's one of the things he says included. And he says, in general, to provide people with service is included in this mitzvah. So some of the Rishonim asked, and some of the later Sfarim asked, it's very hard to understand how V'yahavta Re'echa Kamocha can be a mitzvah saseh, even though it sounds like the paradigmatic mitzvah saseh. But since we have the word Kamocha, it's supposed to be equal to yourself. So how can you ever do things for others the same extent and the same degree that you do for yourself? You can't even do that for one other person, let alone for every other person. It's just you don't have enough resources. So that was the kasha that bothered some of the Meforshim. And they assumed that really we have to see V'yahavta Re'echa Kamocha as a negative, like the Gemara says in Shabbos in Daf Lamed Gimel, that Hillel formulated it in the negative. The Aramaic, Da'alach Sani L'Chevrecha Lo Savid, that which is hateful to you, don't do to others. So that's how some understood, if you have to Re'echa Kamocha, you have to see it as a losa, say, not that you have to do for other people what you would want for yourself, because that seems physically impossible, but that you should not do to others that which you would not want done to you. That seems a little bit more manageable, that you could say, okay, fine, at least passively, you're not going to do to other people what you don't want them doing to you. So it seems to be that that is a reasonable issue here as well, that and again, V'yahavta Re'echa Kamocha, it sounds very subjective, but we also use it in a more objective sense, that even if you're going to say, well, yeah, I believe everything should be free, I believe information wants to be free, so I wouldn't care, whatever I do, I want the whole world to take it, which there is a case to be made. You know, this is a little bit of an evolving issue in terms of what people want, in terms of intellectual accomplishments. But it still seems fair to say that as long as there is a market for books and for tapes and for music and for movies and the like, that people do it in order to be able to control and profit from what they do. And it's a violation of V'yahavta Re'echa Kamocha to deprive them of the control. So some of these models would lead to the conclusion, especially if you say it's not straight out gezeila, but it's something else. It's depriving the person of the profit that they could be making, and that's usur for whichever one of these categories. So then there are those who maintain, okay, so if I'm not in the market, then it should be mutter, because if he wouldn't be profiting off me anyway, so then I should be allowed to do it because I'm not costing him any profit. So in theory, that makes sense. I think in practice, it's a little bit of a dangerous hanhaga, because it's very easily abused. And that would also completely mess up the market. You can't have a market where the only people who have to pay for things, the only people who have to pay for a tape are the people who really want it. But the people who could take it or leave it, they can download it for free because they wouldn't buy it if they had to pay for it. So that's very easily abused, and that completely undermines the market. So I think what makes more sense as a practical point to say is that if it's a scenario where no reasonable person would pay for it, not just that you don't want it enough that you'd be willing to pay for it, but that it's a kind of usage that nobody would pay under those circumstances. You want to Xerox a few pages of the book, you have a heavy textbook, and you want to Xerox a few pages because you want to read it on the plane. So you're not going to buy another copy to do that. It doesn't make sense. And if, for whatever reason, that was the only way to do it, you would just read something else on the plane. So if it's a scenario where no reasonable person would pay for it, then I think there's more to base it on. But to say subjectively, well, I don't want to buy it that much, so I won't take it if it's free, so therefore I can take it, I'm not in the market. I think that svar is a dangerous svar. That's one that could be easily abused. But all right, those are some of the highlights of the issue of intellectual property as emerges specifically from our sugya on Fayin Ches. So we're... And tonight we'll see, maybe we'll add a point or two tomorrow, but we're basically done with that. So next, I'd like to talk about unions, maybe about strikes a little bit, and then go into severance, dismissal, and things along those lines. All right, everyone should have a wonderful night. It should be only good things, and I will see you, Bez Hashem, tomorrow.